Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Welcome to Apparently, the podcast for absolutely average parents. I'm Ann Johnsos.
And I'm Tracy Weiner. Ann and I have been friends for a very long time at WGN.
Yeah, we started here in the 90s. I produced Bob Collins and Roy Leonard.
And I produced Spike and Cochran.
So we spent our 20s as wing women for each other, and it didn't work out very well.
But then it did, and we found the right guys, and we stood up in each other's weddings.
And then we had babies within weeks of each other, and we went from producers to reproducers.
We make it look easy.
Which brings us to this podcast. We want to talk about topics that intrigue us and you and provide some knowledge to other average parents.
We're average. We're not experts. So we'll tackle these topics with people who know what they're doing.
Yeah, we get the experts. And I fully expect to embarrass myself along the way.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we already have.
So welcome to Apparently.
We make it look easy. We make it look good. When everybody's sneezing, they stop and take a look.
Apparently, I think all parents need to go back to school and learn how to behave at sporting events of their kids. I mean, I really think that parents need to have a timeout and be put into timeout and think about how their how it's affecting our kids.
So this is a topic that I've heard a lot about, and it's weird, and it might be a city versus suburban thing. It might be a boy versus girl thing. My girls play soccer and volleyball, but they play at Neighborhood Boys and Girls Club. They play at CPS, Chicago Public Schools. And the parents that I've witnessed are very quiet.
Oh, maybe it is a suburban thing.
It might be. And I can tell you, even with the Neighborhood Boys and Girls Clubs, I hope my daughter doesn't listen to this. Most of us sit in our cars and watch the soccer games from our cars because the weather's so bad. We're like, oh, I'm not getting out.
Oh, hell no. That's not what's happening in the suburbs. Because, well, there's an article which made me think about this, was that all this bad behavior is actually causing problems in youth sports for them to find officials to stand behind home plate. So, you know, Ethan plays baseball, basketball, soccer, mm-hmm. All through Park District or, you know, travel clubs and stuff. And baseball's in full swing right now. And so I'm sitting 2 or 3 days a week at a baseball diamond watching Ethan play. And I'm also witnessing bad behavior.
Like what? Give me an example.
Oh, they don't like the call. You know, some of these kids are 12 years old behind. You can be as young as 6th grade, 12 years old. Behind home plate.
To be a referee or an ump?
Yes, in baseball.
Wow.
And I have friends who, their kids are already, you know, Kate's age, that are already their first job. It's $25 a game.
That's great money.
It's great money. And if you love sports and you love doing it, it's like a win-win because you're making money and you're doing and you're playing and being part of something that you already like.
Right.
So coaches don't like a call. Mm-hmm. Whether it's that's not a strike zone, or they don't like a call at first base, like if they're safe and
I'm laughing because last week I went to my nephew's baseball game, and I don't go to all of them, but I'm sitting there and it's a very tight knit group because they actually get out of their cars, and I was sitting there and I was about 700 feet away from anything and could not see a thing, but he got called out on a strike, and I was like, that was low and outside. We want a pitcher, not a belly. Anyway, everyone
turned. You did that?
Yes, because I thought it was funny. And everyone turned at me and they're like, I got the death stare. And I thought that's what parents did at games.
Well, in the suburbs they do, I guess. I was reading somewhere that 80% of high school officials are quitting before their third year of officiating. Like, because these kids are not making enough money
right.
to make it worth the turmoil and the battery of insults and yelling. This is embarrassing, but at our rec center, a police officer was called to a basketball game for an elementary school basketball game at a park district. I mean, the thing about all this is, and I tell my husband this all the time, it's like,
Ethan is not going to the Olympics.
Right.
He's not going to play in college.
Ethan, don't listen to this part.
So it's really just, it's just so funny that this is happening, and it's too bad. Like, in fact, out in the suburbs, they don't have enough people to ump the games, and so they're doing double duty. Not only that there should be somebody behind the plate and then out in the outfield to call, like, safe and whatever those plays, and they're just having one person behind the plate.
Oh, then you can't see anything from there.
Yeah, it's really sad. So I thought that it would be interesting to talk about this topic and maybe bring in somebody, because, you know, we don't know what the hell.
Yeah,
we don't know any better.
We don't know anything.
So I thought it would be interesting to bring in an expert.
All right, cool. Let's bring him in.
So to talk about this topic, we called Dr. Bruce Savary, a psychology professor at State University of New York, Albany. And he's also an author of a book called Reforming Sports Before the Clock Runs Out. Bruce, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. So I was reading about your book, and it looks like your book is kind of part memoir, part kind of investigating the problem here of what's happening. Why do you think this is happening in youth sports these days?
Well, I think that what it really comes down to is that our expectations for young kids in sports are really unrealistic. They're developmentally inappropriate, and they're really not meeting the needs of kids to have fun and enjoy themselves. A lot of times we're using what I would call professional sports models that are heavily invested in competition and winning. And for lack of a better expression, we're trying to jam them down the throats of our kids. And I think that there's just so much pressure on now kids at a very young age to win, to compete, to get better, to specialize in a sport, that we're really taking all the fun away from them. And I think that it's adults that are doing it. And I think that until we kind of back up and take a look at this completely from the perspective of a young child, who just wants to have fun, wants to have a good time, wants to participate, learn something about the game, learn the skills, learn about ethics and sportsmanship. Until we get that through our heads, the heads of parents, then we're going to continue to see the kind of things that you have described, which take place on every baseball field, hockey rink, basketball court, in the country today with young kids. You know, I heard a coach once say that he would only continue coaching if he did it in an orphanage. And
with no parents?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that's a sad commentary on how bad things have gotten. But, you know, there's a definite conflict there between what a parent wants to get out of youth sports for their child and what a child wants.
Well, Dr. Savary, one of the things you said, quoted, this is back in 2006, but you talked about what you just said, essentially, kids need to have fun, participate, and learn skills.
Yep.
And you said these should always trump the desire to win when we're talking about youth sports, but adults, coaches, league administrators, et cetera, won't let this happen because their own needs get in the way. What are the needs of the adults? What the heck?
Well, I think the needs of the adults, they run at a number of different levels. So one is an investment in their child to get better and potentially compete for a scholarship, an athletic scholarship in college, maybe even make it to the pros. For some parents, sadly, it's about maybe their own misspent youth.
Yeah, that's what I think happens a lot.
I think that that's also part of it, but it's this obsession really with competition and winning that I think has just taken over. And unfortunately, with a lot of the organizations that are out there now, youth, baseball, basketball, football, hockey, you know, there's some really good people that are involved in these organizations, but unfortunately they get overwhelmed by the parents who have other goals in mind. And they start making decisions that are more about you know, competition and winning as opposed to just, you know, making sure that the kids have a good time.
Yeah, and play with their friends.
Participate. I mean, you ask any kid, a real young kid at the, you know, maybe a few months after their sports team has ended their season, how many wins they had. They don't know. But what they will tell you is whether or not they had fun and whether or not they played instead of sitting on the bench.
Agreed.
That's what really means something to them at that age. It's not about winning. I mean, they forget about the game, you know, less than an hour later.
So are there coaches out there who are not playing some of their players?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding?
Wait, you can't sign up and not play. What?
Oh, my gosh, in the playoffs? Are you kidding me? That happens. There's people that there's a dynamic with, like, the pitching rotation. And I've had people where I actually witnessed a basketball game in Ethan was in second grade.
Okay.
Second grade. So we're talking about are 7 or 8 years old. And there were girls, because it was still co-ed, and the girls were on the bench. I literally was outside my skin about it because it was very obvious what was happening. And they weren't being rotated in during, because a lot of times park districts give like this grid that you can use like an Excel spreadsheet to take the science out of like knowing when to substitute people. It will just, you put everyone's names in and boom, it spits out like when you need to take them in and out to make sure everyone gets equal playing time.
That sounds right.
And it's great. We used it all the time because Doug was a coach. This coach was not doing that. And I literally was going to, be that parent actually shouting down saying, this is ridiculous. Like, do these people think that they're going to, like, go to the Olympics or, like...
Well, that's part of the problem. I mean, the parents don't really understand how remote it is. It's like winning the lottery. If you have a child that makes it as far as a Division I scholarship or picks up a paycheck in the pros, I mean, it's just... infinitesimal, the chances of doing that. And I'll go one step further. You know, by an order of about 20 to 1, there's a lot more money available for academic scholarships in college than athletic scholarships.
Wow.
But that's not something that seems to sink in, you know, with parents. And again, it's because our sports culture right now at the youth level is just so pressurized, and we need to really take that pressure off.
In one of the articles we read, you mentioned that it's drastically different today than it was 10 or 15 years ago.
And I thought it was bad then.
Is it because of the cost of college?
I think that's part of it. I absolutely think that that's part of it. And I think that parents see that as a way of lessening or improving their finances in terms of what they're investing in their child with all these select teams, travel teams, elite teams that they can play on, and all the money that they fork over for that.
That's what I think is a big thing. So my daughter's in travel soccer. It was $700 for 8 weeks.
What?
Yeah.
I think that, well, and I talk about this with all the moms in my neighborhood all the time that have 3 or 4 kids. How can you afford to put 3 or 4 kids in a sport, especially even a travel sport? Because as they get older, the amount of teams that you can play on gets smaller, because I've also seen specialization where people just decide, I'm just going to play baseball.
That's a whole nother destructive part of all this, but let me mention just a couple of things here. Two really critical findings in the youth sports area as far as the research that goes on. You know, in spite of this epidemic of obesity in our country, you know, 70% of kids abandon sports by the age of 13. And the principal reason that they give is that they just aren't having fun. And they're not having fun because that winnowing out process has started to occur very, very early. It's occurring even earlier now. Let's find the best kids in our community and let's compete against the best kids in another community that's 10 minutes away from us. And in my mind, that's absolutely destructive. And the reason why it's destructive is this. You know, first of all, specializing in a sport in order to get good at it, something that I call the Tiger Woods syndrome, is a falsehood. Tiger Woods had a special set of skills. He probably could have waited till he was 10 or 15 years of age before picking up a golf club. Early success in a sport prior to puberty does not predict later success in that sport. That's a well-known finding in this area. So kids who can't walk and chew gum in the fifth and sixth, seventh grade, all of a sudden they go through a growth spurt and they become the best kid out there as a freshman and sophomore in terms of their basketball skills, where they couldn't even dribble a ball when they were in the third, fourth, and fifth grade. So, again, those are myths that drive parents to push kids into youth sports, and it's
so easy to fall into it.
These things for a long time, and it just, believe me, it just doesn't sink in.
We all see, I see that, but I still see people falling prey to that all the time. I mean, I don't do it.
And a lot of it is because of what happens with your neighbor and what happens with your friends.
Exactly.
And you know, it's keeping up with the Joneses and
pressure to, like, keep up with what everyone else is doing.
Yeah, and specializing is that in and of itself is, you know, a fascinating topic and one that I, in particular, have been very concerned with for a long period of time.
Yeah, I talked to a doctor a few years ago who said that this specialization is actually leading to injury and that the kids who play multiple sports are more averse to injury.
That's absolutely correct.
And why is that? Because they're not using all their muscles?
That's correct, yeah. They're overusing certain muscle sets, and it's leading to all these vulnerabilities in terms of fractures. And, you know, take the sport of baseball, for example, where you're seeing this rash of tendon injuries in young kids that are pitchers. And it's because they're pitching like 9-10 months out of the year because they're playing on, you know, three or four different teams, sometimes simultaneously. And no one's really keeping track of
pitch count.
They're
yeah.
pitching and pitch counts and so on. They've gotten a little bit better at that. But still, you walk into the office of any the person who's involved in physical therapy, or walk into a person who's in the field of dealing with these kids and their injuries, any medical professional, and they'll tell you that it has just escalated enormously in the last 10 or 20 years. So it's a real phenomenon.
So all this bad behavior, like at the baseball diamond or the soccer field or at the basketball rec center, is having a negative effect on getting these getting umps or officials to monitor the game. So how can we solve the problem? Well, I mean, how do you fix it?
Yeah, here's how you fix it. You got to take the pressure off of winning and one-loss records and so on. It really doesn't amount to anything at real young ages. You know, the parents keep track of things, but the kids don't really keep track of things. You know, there's a model that's being used more and more, something that's called the recess model. And for young kids, it's more about participating. And if you can remember, I can remember back in my youth days, and I think that I'm probably a little bit older than the two of you, but you know, I remember more about those games that I played on vacant fields or in the driveway of some of my friends.
The sandlot with no grown-ups.
I remember more about that than I do about the organized sports that I played. You know, we made up the teams. We made up the rules. We had enormous fun playing, and sometimes we would play all day long.
And you problem solve, you
and
learn.
There were no parents involved.
Yep.
And it was the best schooling that I could ever possibly have in terms of sports. Now, things are so organized and so over-organized. You know, walk by these pristine Little League fields now, and you know, it's incredible. It's like being at Disneyland in terms of its degree of organization. So some of that is good, but you know, there are other parts of it that aren't so good when the emphasis upon winning has become so great. So.
I read somewhere too that social media is fueling the problem, because a call that is made is a call that is made and it stands because the referee has said what it is. But someone's shooting a video and then posts it, and then the parents chew on that for days and days and days, and they get all frothy. Is that something you've taken into account, or is that something you've noticed?
Well, I think that that certainly plays, a role in all of it. That news travels around more in those circles, and it gets parents even more hopped up about, certain situations that have occurred. But again, I think a lot of this is due to this incredible imbalance between this conflict, really, between parents and what their needs are and kids and what their needs are. And sadly, we've come down in favor of parents in terms of their needs. And we are not serving our kids well in terms of having programs, youth programs that are designed to enhance their skills, to teach them, about character and ethics and so on in sports, to participate, learn, good habits in terms of the kinds of skills that are being taught. And again, the last thing should be, win-loss records.
Well, isn't that like the mission of the YMCA or park districts? The whole point is to raise and give experiences to kids that is a positive, fun, collaborative, learning team spirit, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it's like some of these coaches, I say dads because a lot of them are, but that they sit on the sidelines and like their record is attached to their reputation or something like that. Yeah. Like who they are is dependent and hinged on what their season record is. And it's so crazy. I see kids crying. This is so sad to admit. And I'm sure this happens everywhere, so I'm not trying to out where I live, but literally I see kids on the baseball diamond who are crying because people are yelling at them, or at soccer games that are yelling at them, whether it's their parents or not. And it's like, this is not good.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I come at this from the angle of, I think sports are absolutely wonderful. I mean, I am a total sports enthusiast. I think that they can be life-changing for people. And the problem is that the models that we use for young kids are really for adults. They overemphasize strategy. They overemphasize winning. It's got to be instead fun and participation, and skill development and all those kinds of things. But here's how you judge a good youth sports program. It's how it treats its least talented players.
That's who I was, by the way.
It's not how it treats its travel team players and its elite players. And
amen.
Because what happens is that those kids, as time goes on and it's starting earlier and earlier, those kids get the bulk of the resources, meaning the playing fields, the good coaching, and so on. So we're making decisions at such an early time about who's good and who's not good. And again, well before the time of puberty, when we should just be emphasizing, participation and skill development. So for people that are in the field, we talk about this thing, the power of the permit. A lot of these programs wouldn't exist in towns if the town didn't grant these organizations permits to use their property, mm-hmm. to use town property. If that program is not one that everyone is getting a fair shake of the resources, and that your least talented players are being treated as well as your most talented players, then that town should not grant the permit for that organization to use a facility. Let's say it's a playing field or a basketball court. Those are the kinds of things that need to happen at the local level in order to bring this thing back to some level of sanity. And quite frankly, parents have to get involved with these organizations and start espousing these really important values about sports that oftentimes are in direct contrast or conflict to winning and competition.
So parents don't have to be quiet and sit on the sidelines. What they need to do is be loud in their advocacy for better playing and better treatment of the players.
Yes, you nailed it. Absolutely, yes.
Now, I have a question for you because I want to stand up for some of the mama bears out there. I put on social media that we were going to talk about this, and one of my friends has sons who play hockey and lacrosse, and she says there are not enough qualified referees, which is a problem. Aside from knowing and enforcing the rules, we rely on the refs to keep our children safe in these high-impact sports, so it can be very frustrating to see the job done poorly, and it does make me a mama bear. Is that a valid point? If there's a shortage of referees and the kids are going out there and they're 12 making, you know, $25. Is it true that they could be not qualified?
I think that happens a fair amount. I think that, again, it's something that we've gotten better at in terms of the training of officials and the training of referees. But if these organizations don't take the bull by the horn and say, hey, we have zero tolerance for a parent going after a referee or a parent going after a coach, or a coach going after a referee, or a coach going after another coach. If we don't have zero tolerance for that, then we lose the battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that that's what happens. A lot of organizations cave in, and they're not willing to say to parents, hey, look, take a hike. You're not doing the kind of job that we want to be done in our organization. So, you know, go find another organization. And there's not enough of that's being done. So, again, it's a parental thing. It's an adult thing. Adults aren't really doing the kind of job that they should be doing.
In my son's Little League program, like I said, the person behind home plate, the ump, is a young kid. And I just, like, 2 games ago, there was a guy, and I didn't know who it was, that was sitting in the stands because I knew all the kids on the team. And I found out that he was the dad of the ump behind the plate. Watching. And so I started asking him questions about it. And I found out that oftentimes for the kids that are behind the plate, because they are like middle school age kids, just earning a buck and, you know, trying to have fun, that the parents are there to monitor and make sure that everything goes okay. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, can you imagine how many hours of, and then the kid also plays sports half the time, is on their own team. So that parent is sitting, watching and monitoring a lot of baseball.
Yeah, I mean, the problem to me is, we've been spineless in a lot of ways in terms of trying to curb a lot of these terrible behaviors that we've seen, while at the same time we're not doing enough to actually professionalize officiating more, even at the youth level. You know, give kids, these 7th and 8th graders and freshmen and sophomores in high school that are umpiring a lot of these games, give them a lot of good training before we allow them to officiate these games. But, you know, it's a concerted effort, and none of this is easy, but it really requires more of an investment on the part of adults to take the bull by the horns and start doing a lot of these things that they should have been doing a long time ago, but have kind of, in some cases, they've kind of given up because these other people who are much more invested in competition and winning tend to take over the reins of a lot of these organizations, and it's been disastrous.
It's like it goes back to bullying. It's just, you know, that bully parent who runs the show and the rest of us are afraid to step up.
Yeah.
We've lost our way. I mean, summer baseball, like, it should be fun.
Oh, yeah.
What can be better than watching youth participate in any sport and just being there on the sidelines to support them? There's nothing better than that. I wish that I was back there with my own kids because it was so much fun. It just takes a few people, unfortunately, to spoil that whole nice
feel good
atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, I think you'd be welcome at Tracy's Baseball Diamond anytime. So anytime you're in the Chicago area, please let us know, and we'll bring you and sit next to you.
Yeah.
Well, that's a nice invitation. Maybe I'll take that upon that.
Thank you so much, Dr. Savari. I appreciate your time.
I do too.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Dr. Bruce Savari, psychology professor at State University of New York at Albany, and author of the book Reforming Sports Before the Clock Runs Out. Hopefully the clock hasn't run out on my son's Little League. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right, great information. I need to confess something, because, again, this is sort of not my game, right? Mm-hmm. But yesterday, my Hannah, my 9-year-old, did Girls on the Run. And you and I have talked about that. It's a great organization that teaches girls to work together and positive self-image. And so they had a 5K yesterday. And I'm standing there. I'm not a runner. And I was watching her. And as she's rounding the corner, and there are some like other kids who are like cutting across the lawn a little bit. And I want to be like, don't cut. Obey the rules. Because I was like, don't cheat. You know, and I was like, I got like all sweaty.
It's thinking, so easy to fall into that trap, isn't it?
I totally did.
And I mean, I'll be honest. I have shouted at games like, Ethan, baseball ready. Or like, Kate, heads up.
You know, stop dancing. No cartwheels.
When they're young, you know, when Ethan was in kindergarten and there's already Little League, you know, there's kids picking their nose out in the outfield. They're like doing, you know, somersaults. They're just farting around. They are totally not baseball ready or paying attention whatsoever. But that's probably developmentally appropriate.
I have a photo in my bedroom of Kate and Sophie at Little Kickers.
Oh, my gosh.
And Kate is like pretty game. She's ready to go. And Sophie is wearing every piece of jewelry she could find. With like a bow in her hair and looking at me like
she looked real pretty.
She sure, yeah. She was like looking at me like, "Why soccer, mom? Why soccer?" And it has not changed.
That's funny.
Yeah. So I might post that picture with this podcast.
Oh, that's a doozy. With her permission, of course.
Oh yeah, I'll have to ask.
So I think we just put ourselves in a timeout just now, and we'll collect our thoughts so that when we're at Girls on the Run next time or at a baseball game, we can check ourselves at the door and know that, hey, that is not what the kids are supposed to be doing right now, and it's all about having fun. So if anything out of this whole conversation was about just let the kids have fun.
Right. And it's not about us. It's not our needs.
Yes.
It's them.
I'm not reliving high school over again, even though I wasn't an athlete in high school. But
yeah, neither was I. But and they are not mini-me's, and they're not reflections of us.
Yes.
They are themselves.
Just let them have fun.
Yeah.
So I'm Tracy Weiner.
And I'm Ann Johnsos.
Thanks for listening to Apparently. We make it look easy. We make it look easy.